room, how she left it. She had her own style, we called Grandma Chic, with her quilts and all of her everything. After she passed, we found her bucket list under her bed that she made when she was 16. And she'd been keeping track of it for 2 years. And it's pretty amazing. Most of the things on here are not even for her. She wanted to be a mother. She wanted to adopt a teenager because she knew that teenagers did never get adopted. And she wanted to be a foster parent. I mean, what 18-year-old child puts, or 16, I guess, when she made it, puts that on their bucket list? Number 57 here, she wanted to go to a floating lantern festival. That is, that's what we're doing for her today, for her birthday. All of her stuffed animals, I mean, she was growing up, but she was still so young. Today is her birthday.
She would be 19.
19 today. They kept pushing that it was safe and effective and...
Did you go too quickly is the first. The answer to that is the speed was a reflection of extraordinary scientific advances and did not compromise safety, nor did it compromise scientific integrity.
Do it for grandma and grandpa and...
We recommend taking the path of least risk. In this case, that's clearly vaccination. And don't forget, your child spends time around other people who are at higher risk, so vaccinating them does contribute to the safety of others, many of whom they love.
She was getting ready to start college, and she was worried about having to get a shot to be able to go to college.
So we're going to require the COVID-19 vaccine for the same reason that we've always required vaccinations of students, whether it's for measles or mumps or meningitis, and it's to keep the community safe.
If it's going to be more accessible to more people, I think why not? I mean, it can't do any harm.
Yeah, as soon as I can, I'll be like waiting on that CVS website to hit the button as soon as I'm eligible.
Everything else was telling her to get it, and she decided, you know, really, what's the chances? What's the chances? Yeah. And she knows other people who've gotten it, and they seem fine, so why not?
You heard what? On whose podcast?
Is he a doctor? No? Scientist? No?
Can he name one of the ingredients in the vaccine?
Can he point to his Gabella?
Get the vaccine.
Get the vaccine.
Just get the vaccine. Roll the up and get the vaccine.
And tell your friend on Facebook to stick to jewelry.
She listened to the BS. She listened to the safe and effective, and it killed her.
When she went to go get the shot, she got some blood work done as well, which she told us about the blood work.
She told us she was going for an annual, just to check up. She was an adult now. She wanted her own doctor, and she wanted to go just to get a checkup. And we said, okay, if that's what you want to do, do it. So she went.
And nothing, it all came back perfectly normal. So at the same time she got the shot, she got a clean bill of health.
Throughout the end of the summer, she started having some issues with feeling lightheaded when she stood up. She was getting nauseous after she ate.
She was sleeping all the time. A lot. I mean, anytime she wasn't at work, she was sleeping.
And
that was not like her.
Yeah, and she was starting to lose weight, but she had no problems before that. No pre-existing conditions, no comorbidities. Mm-mm. She liked to jog around the neighborhood. She would go to the gym with her sister. She was...
take the dogs for walks.
Yeah.
I mean, she was pretty active.
Had we known
then
what we know now, Yeah. We probably could have done something. I don't know.
I don't know. But we never would have thought about that because we didn't know, you know, they suppressed all that everywhere. We didn't know that it was causing that. Yeah. So we wouldn't have thought that.
We've since learned that those are all symptoms of heart damage.
Yeah.
That her heart was getting damaged increasingly as the time went by.
What the last 3 years have brought to cardiology has been almost a career's worth of work of individuals across an age spectrum with new cardiovascular problems. I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I'm a practicing internist and cardiologist in the Dallas, Texas area. I'm witnessing in my practice today a tsunami of cardiovascular issues. And they include myocarditis, or heart damage, inflammation of the heart. All the regulatory agencies agree the vaccines cause myocarditis. There are over 200 peer-reviewed literature papers on both fatal and non-fatal myocarditis. Acceleration of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, and ischemic strokes. Blood clots occurring in the arteries, the veins, blood clots in a whole variety of scenarios. And SARS-CoV-2 indeed, based on the peer-reviewed literature, promotes cardiovascular disease. All the elements that I've just outlined can be caused by SARS-CoV-2 infection. Now, importantly, the risks with the infection are time-limited. In an important paper by Zee and colleagues, XIE, from the U.S. Veterans Administration system, demonstrated that after serious COVID-19, of which a U.S. veteran would be hospitalized, there is a risk period for heart attacks, strokes, other cardiovascular events. It's about 6 weeks. So 6 weeks after an infection, that's the risk period of which the infection itself could provoke a cardiovascular event.
It was 112 days. From the day she got the shot to the day she died was 112 days. A little over 3 months.
There's been a series of papers published by lead author Jenna Schauer on pediatric vaccine-induced myocarditis. And what we've learned, sadly, is it doesn't go away in a matter of a few days or a few weeks. In some unlucky children, the heart develops a permanent scar. So with a permanent scar, it's possible, you know, in the wrong conditions, at the wrong time, everything lining up with a permanent scar, to get an abnormal heart rhythm, again, a reentrant heart rhythm, ventricular tachycardia, degenerates to ventricular fibrillation and death, and have a cardiac arrest.
She actually was staying the night with her older sister and one of their friends, and she woke up that morning and was complaining of not being able to breathe and that her whole body hurt, just all over, everywhere. But she was a tough girl, and so she said she was going to go lay back down and see if she could feel better. And then her sister went to check on her about 10 minutes later, and she couldn't get her to wake up. And then they called me, and I made it over there about 3 minutes, and found she wasn't breathing, and had to start CPR and call 911.
So it turns out there are two periods of time where the human body gets a surge of adrenaline. One is during exercise. People know that because they can feel the adrenaline. There are three circulating catecholamines, dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine, the surge of those. But the other time where there's a surge of catecholamines is in the waking cycle between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. We actually get a natural surge of adrenaline. That's what wakes us up.
I was getting dressed in the morning, and I saw that I had missed several calls, so I answered the phone, and she said, "Alan, it's Trista. It's serious. They're taking her to the hospital. Get to St. Francis right now." So I did. I drove as fast as I could. There was a lady there waiting for me. They didn't make me sign in. They didn't ask me who I was there to see. She just said, are you dad? I said, yeah, I guess. Yeah, they call me that. And she says, follow me. And as we're walking through the couple sets of double doors, I remember thinking to myself, this can't be good. She asked me if I was dad. Didn't make me sign in, and they already know who I'm there to see.
As they were moving her up to the ICU, one of her friends said to us, I think I need to tell you guys this. She got the COVID vaccine, and she asked us not to tell you.
So now we have children taking the COVID-19 vaccine. Some of them are developing a scar. In the Jenna Schauer paper, some of the scars in children are substantial, and they don't always feel it. They don't feel the symptoms when they take the vaccine. They're suffering heart damage. They develop a myocardial scar.
At the time, nothing really registered. Like, it was just, you know, well.
Yeah, it was like, well, that's unfortunate.
That's awful.
Like, really, what's the chances that this is what, you know, caused that? That's kind of how we felt at first.
We didn't really put it together until a couple of weeks of research.
Her toxicology came back clean. She tested negative for COVID. They had no idea what was going on. They said her heart was swollen, her organs were shutting down. I don't believe that she was there anymore at that point. I believe she passed at the apartment.
They were keeping her alive then with machines and...
It didn't look like Trista. Yeah. There was none of that bright.
The light was gone.
She was gray. I had a checklist that I thought about in my head because I knew that it was over. And I remembered I wanted to hold her hand. I wanted to give her a hug. I wanted to kiss her on the forehead. And I wanted to smell the top of her head because every time I kissed her, that's how I did it. And I wanted to do those things because I knew I'd never be able to again. Sorry. They called her official time of death at 5:05 that day.
An unlucky child will lose their life months after taking the vaccine due to a cardiac arrest, and the underlying pathology is vaccine-induced myocarditis and myocardial scar.
The idea of...
Of leaving that hospital without her.
It felt... It was so weird. I don't know if weird is not the right word. It felt wrong.
You just... your child's laying there.
You just leave. And they just want you to leave.
Leave her there.
So when I got there, they wouldn't let me on the ambulance. I told them, that's my son. They said, you know, I had to stay off the ambulance. So I followed the ambulance to the hospital. And they worked on him for a while. The doctor came out, just told me, your son's dead. You can go home. And I went crazy. I grabbed the doctor, threw him against the wall. I had a police officer all right there. And I just it wouldn't register.
It's been 5 months. The Oklahoma Medical Examiner's Office still hasn't completed her autopsy.
I kind of feel like we're getting the runaround, honestly.
From a lot of different agencies. I feel like we're being purposely kept in the dark on a lot of it.
So we're going to Trista's gravesite that right now is just a little medallion in the ground as we're waiting to be able to pay off her memorial. Because we're waiting for the Emmys report to be able to finalize the death certificate, be able to have insurance pay. It just sucks. I feel bad for all of her friends and everybody right now because there's no... I mean, we have her ashes in her bedroom, but they don't want to come bother us to see her and spend time with her. So, and she did have a lot of friends. A lot of really sweet friends.
It's horrendous what they're doing.
It's criminal what they're doing. To everyone, and in every aspect of it.
They wouldn't give me the autopsy report. They were bouncing me around from two different places, and they kept saying, you know, oh, I don't have it, I send it off. No, I haven't received it yet, back and forth. So I said, you know what, I'm tired of arguing with y'all. I said, I'm going to let an attorney talk to both of you. And miracle of God, next morning, your autopsy is ready. So I got it, picked it up, and Dr. Peter McCullough reviewed it.
I was fortunate to review the autopsy report, and in my interpretation, I have considerable experience in cardiac pathology and examination of hearts at the time of death. I believe the autopsy is conclusive for the cause of death being COVID-19 vaccine-induced myocarditis. He took a messenger RNA vaccine, installs the genetic code for the lethal Wuhan spike protein. The spike protein has been found in the human heart. It causes inflammation, it causes tissue destruction, and it sets up a zone of abnormal conduction.
The day Junior was born, he was held like this, like a loaf of bread. They told me, here, he's yours, you take care of him, and which I did. I mean, I was proud. He made me proud all the time. Like I said, Junior was my best friend. I never knew my father. So I don't know what a father's love is. I never had that male role in my life. And I swore, my son's not gonna know what that feels like to not have a dad there. When Pfizer came out and said it was safe for teenagers, I waited a little while. I took the Moderna, both, and I didn't get reactions. I said, well, I'm okay. I said, Pfizer says it's safe. You wanna go get it? He goes, sure, Dad, you know, like nothing. You know, kids don't like shots, but you know, what we're living through with this COVID issue, supposedly, we figured we're protecting ourselves. They promised it would help us. 5 days later, my neighbor, Junior's best friend's mom, she called me, mister, can I take the boys to eat and play basketball? I said, yes, ma'am, of course. She took them to the park. They got off the truck and took off running across the parking lot, and he collapsed. That's where he right there. No, nothing, no, any signs showing.
In the case of young Ramirez, what we learned is that the heart was swollen. In the setting of myocarditis, before COVID, our guidelines say they can never exercise. If there's myocarditis or heart inflammation, there can be no exercise because the surge of adrenaline can stimulate the electricity to begin to have this abnormal conduction through the area of injury and circle back around. That's called a reentrant arrhythmia, ventricular tachycardia. Ventricular tachycardia is very fast, and in a young man like this, it could be tolerated for maybe a minute or so or less. It basically degenerates into ventricular fibrillation, which is a near flatline rhythm, and unless promptly shocked at the VT or VF stage, it's over with. And the death ultimately is a flatline death, a VT, VF, asystolic death. It's considered a sudden arrhythmic death, a cardiac arrest directly related to COVID-19 vaccine-induced myocarditis.
Pfizer did murder my son. If I murder a child, I will be sitting in the penitentiary for murdering a child. Why aren't these people in jail, locked up?
Since his case, there have been a multitude of similar cases of death that's occurred after COVID-19 vaccination that likely is fatal myocarditis. So importantly, the first case of fatal myocarditis was reported by Verma and colleagues in 2021 in the New England Journal of Medicine after COVID-19 vaccination. If this happens, how come it doesn't happen to everyone? And that's what we're trying to study. We're doing careful research, following the literature very carefully. As we sit here today, we are looking at billions of people, billions worldwide, who have been exposed to the virus or the vaccine or both. Now, even if a small fraction of those individuals have a complication, a side effect, or a residual syndrome, that percentage, even no matter how small, is a huge number of individuals.
There was a mixed shift from 2020 to 21 of excess mortality from old to young. So in 2020, it was mostly old people. We also saw a mixed shift in disability starting to rise in May of 21. The excess mortality has shifted so much so that it's pretty phenomenal what you see here in the charts before you. But what I find interesting and curious is this excess mortality continues, the disabilities continue, and our health authorities have no interest in trying to figure out what's going on. This should be a national story in my mind. And then to end, Denmark and the UK have already stopped their vaccination program. Denmark under 50, they've now said no vaccines for anyone that'd rather you get COVID. The Denmark data, if you look at that, that was a disaster in excess mortality. So they saw something clearly that our U.S. health authorities should be seeing as well. The UK's stopped the vaccination for under 12. So my question, Senator, is why are our health authorities still pushing this vaccine if other countries are backing off?
I have a lot of people that made graphics, designs for the trailer from all over Canada and Australia, but it was just about Junior. I said, no, this trailer's not about just Junior. I said, it's about Junior and all the vaccine injured that we have. I said, because there's thousands of it. People look at the trailer and they'll tell me, man, that's a lot of people. I said, no, it's not. That's not even a little bit. I said, there's more. I said, I would need 18-wheelers to put everyone's picture on it. The thing is, I don't want to make the pictures too small. I want people to actually be able to see the faces of each person that's on here. My whole mission now, you know, bring awareness to all the families, because I don't want to get any emails, text messages anymore. I get them from all over the world. I think you'd be proud of it. I mean, I just picked it up last week, and as soon as I walked to that side door, I seen it was like a life-size picture, and I started crying because I could almost feel like I could hug them. And I think you'd be proud of it. If I don't do what I'm doing, I could hear him telling me, you know, you need to practice what you preach. So that's why I have to keep doing this. You know, I have no choice. What was it, about the first year, I was ready to give up. I didn't think I was accomplishing anything. I didn't think it was getting out there. And for some reason, I was going through my file box, and I found a Father's Day card, my last Father's Day card. And I just started crying for probably about 3 or 4 hours on the couch. I figured that was his way of telling me to don't give up, to keep on fighting. And that's the same one I have on the back of my motorcycle. I figured, well, I found it. I got to put it on my bike, you know, just to remind me why I'm doing this. I have to honor my son in any way I can. I mean, look at all the injuries and deaths they've caused, and especially to babies, you know. That's, I don't understand, you know.
What I've seen that I think is a grave concern to me over the last 3 years is a myriad of very adverse obstetrical outcomes and adverse infertility issues. That's what I've seen in my clinical practice. The risk of menstrual abnormalities is just unparalleled in my career, and the risk of miscarriages. I started having very significant concerns after the rollout of the vaccine. That's when I saw all my damages, death, and destruction.
Our little angel, Naomi Laney White. This right here is our family plot. Over there on the other side is where my grandmother and grandfather are, and this side is where my mom and dad are. So I talked it over with my brother and sister, and they okayed having Naomi's ashes buried about right here, and we have a marker being worked on right now by a local fella here in town that he's going to come up and place for us whenever everything's ready. Now, one other reason to call this place very special, you know, especially when I'm working daylight on my job, I'll stop up here and spend 5 or 10 minutes talking to mom and dad, saying hi to Annie and Papaw. So now I'll say hi to Naomi.
beautiful baby. And she was perfect in every way. Except one terrible way.
I think I was exactly 39 weeks when she was born.
For those 11 hours she was alive, it was terrible.
At the time, I was working at a nursing home, I think it was, and they gave us a deadline for the COVID vaccine. So later that month, I went and got the vaccine before the date was done, and that was my first trimester. And then I had to go for a second one 2 weeks later and had no idea of what I was in for. But they never, like, warned me or anything when I was getting my vaccine. Just told me I could get it. So I got it just to keep my job. I noticed a lot of stuff that was way different than Piper's. The movements were different. I was in pain a lot compared to my first pregnancy. I went through such a, like, normal pregnancy before, and then after, like, a couple years later, I get pregnant again, and I take this vaccine, and it's, like, totally different. Everything's just different than it was before. I was induced, 'cause my OB was working in two different locations, and by the time he'd be back in town, I'd be too far along in my pregnancy. So he decided to induce me early before he went out of town. Right when she was done getting my IV, Naomi's heart dropped. I think it was what, like the 40s? And it didn't come up for 8 minutes. And they were changing me in different positions and trying to get me oxygen, trying to get me to breathe. And it just wasn't coming up. And they said a C-section was optional, but they didn't think I needed it. So, like, the beginning of labor wasn't, like, the greatest. Like, pretty much through the whole thing, it wasn't. It was just awful. It was just horrible. So I managed just to, like, pull through, like, till it was time to push. And then I noticed that, like, a whole bunch of nurses were just looking at me and everything, and they were starting to take my temperature and everything and putting oxygen on me, and it just, like, seemed like nobody was talking and would tell me anything until she was born. And then from there, it just went downhill. She maybe cried one time. And after that, like, she laid there, and I looked at her. She was looking at me, and then, like, it's like she kept turning purple and just wasn't getting enough oxygen. And they let me give her a kiss, and they, like, took her away and said that, oh, she'll be fine. She just needs oxygen and maybe some IV fluids. I kind of knew. When I held her, when they put her in my arms, there was no chance. Her body was so heavy, and her mouth was purple, and I just... It wasn't fun. It wasn't what I wanted for her. I held her for, like, right when they were pulling the plug, and that was it. That's the last time I saw her.
I'm a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist, and board-certified maternal-fetal medicine physician. I've seen way over 26,000 patients just in the last 4 years or so. And I've been doing this for 44 years now. There's no question that fetal malformations have increased.
She had two brain bleeds, but we have no clue where they came from.
She had little pustules.
Oh, yeah, the
on her head that were weeping fluid. Out. Weeping blood, fluid. So there was that, and the lack of gas exchange that caused her body to go acidic. Had one lung, only one lung was working, the other was completely collapsed. It was diaphragmatic hernia that she had. And
I've spoken with, obviously, with Tori, and we spoke a lot about the baby that she lost. And obviously, it's Naomi. It's fresh. You know that it's earlier this year. She tells me that the baby was diagnosed with a congenital diaphragmatic hernia after birth. Congenital diaphragmatic hernia is a very, very serious malformation. So serious that if it's not identified prior to birth, and mom delivers unprepared and unknowingly in a regular hospital, it's pretty much, unfortunately, we're going to lose that baby after birth. Because what happens is that every time that baby takes a breath, that gut migrates up there, where the entire gut ends up being up here instead of down here in the abdomen because there's a hole in the diaphragm. Well, that will impart a very high lethal risk because all that bowel pushes that left lung over to the right side, pushes the heart over the right side, and the baby's lungs won't develop. And if you don't fix that and you don't prepare for that after birth, those babies will die. And there's a high mortality rate.
But her placenta was also...
It was like this big.
It was the size of a baseball.
Yeah.
The baby's fine in the womb because the placenta breathes for the baby, the fetus, the preborn. But as soon as birth occurs and you clip that umbilical cord, then the baby can't sustain oxygenation. And there was another problem that the baby was diagnosed with after birth, which appears to be a malformation of a short umbilical cord. As I recall, the umbilical cord was only 10 centimeters, and an umbilical cord should be like 30 centimeters at about that gestational age.
And that's why the hernia ripped more. Yeah. Is when she was pushing, it was pulling her back in, and then they was pulling, and she was being sucked back. It was just too much pressure.
Yeah.
Is there any relationship with the vaccine? And I said, absolutely, yes. Any vaccine like that causes inflammation certainly has a potential of causing any malformation because it's crucial to the development. Probably the foremost expert in the world, maternal fetal medicine doc, his name is Roberto Romero. He's a very brilliant researcher, and he's done research on inflammation and pregnancy for 5 decades. He's really, really remarkable investigator and researcher. And his work on inflammation, even supported by the government, the NIH, and all these. Any substance that causes inflammation in pregnancy, it's a death knell to every organ system. It's the most inflammatory substance that has, in my experience, has ever occurred in the history of human beings. And when that spike protein attaches to the ACE receptor at the furin cleavage site, it causes severe inflammation throughout the body. It's devastating.
Like, earlier that night, there was another girl that had the same issue, but hers ended up surviving.
He told the baby's daddy that they usually see one in 2,500, and he had seen one in his whole career of 30 or 40 years, and he had seen 3 in the last month.
Now that we can quantitate the amount of spike protein in those vaccinated compared with those unvaccinated that have had COVID-19 infection, it's astronomical. It's a billion-fold increase in the levels of concentration. And that's of spike protein after vaccination compared with those just after COVID-19 infection. But now, when it changes your genetics to produce a foreign toxic protein for the rest of your life, that has a horrible adverse effect on the vascular system and on the development of the organs. And one could easily postulate that could easily have caused Tori's and Naomi's malformation inside Tori. The risk of a stillbirth. Here's a crucial question. Did it go up in 2020? In 2020, when the vaccine was not out, was there an increase? There wasn't a decrease in number of births. Was there an increase in the rate of stillbirth in 2020? If COVID-19 in of itself did cause an increase in the stillbirth rate, then we should see it in 2020. What I saw was I did not see obstetrical outcomes that were adverse in 2020. I aggregated 3 years of data, 2017, 2018, and 2019. Not Jim Thorpe's data, not Peter McCullough's data, not anybody else's data, not your government's data from Statista. And when I aggregate those 3 years, 2017, 2018, and 2019, the stillbirth rate was 5.83 per thousand. So it's a rate. It doesn't change with changing numbers of births because it's a birth rate. Well, what happened in 2020 when we had the greatest number of deaths in the United States of America and around the world from COVID-19? Did the stillbirth rate go up? Did it stay the same? Or did it go down? Well, it went down. It went from 5.83 per thousand down to 5.74 per thousand. So that's not Jim Thorpe's statistics. That's your government statistics. We're late for our stillbirth data from 2021. Why are we late? Or 2022? It's not even reported. And by the way, that's the exact same rate that my whistleblower, Michelle Gershman, RN, the postpartum nurse whistleblower from Fresno, California, she too had a five-fold increase. You're looking at 1 to 2 stillbirths every 2 to 3 months, even through 2020. And then the vaccines roll out, and it goes up to 29.3 fetal deaths per thousand. That's a five-fold increase.
Before March of 2021, we would have maybe 1 or 2 fetal demises every couple of months. And then after March of 2021, pretty much we started having 1 or 2 per week. My name is Michelle Gershman, and I'm a registered nurse in Fresno, California. I've been an RN for 6 years. My first 3 years as a nurse, I worked as a cardiac nurse. And the last 3 years, I've worked on the postpartum floor, taking care of newborn babies and mothers that just delivered their babies. And then March of 2021, around that time, we started having an increase in fetal demises. And a fetal demise is where a baby passes away inside the mother. And they were basically full term. And it looked like a pattern was happening. These mothers would go to their doctor's office while full term. They'd receive a COVID vaccine. And then within like 1 week, they're delivering a dead baby. I kept seeing these fetal demises. I kept seeing these mothers with health problems. I kept seeing mothers with high blood pressure issues, bleeding from their eyes, blood clots coming out of them, like all these horrific things that you would only see in a horror movie. And this is like every time I come to work, and then I see these babies that are like having severe cases of like jaundice, and they're having respiratory issues, all these things that didn't used to happen. Then in September of 2022, I came to work and I checked my email and I saw this horrific email, and I read it and I was in complete disbelief. Good evening, everyone. Well, it seems as though the increase of demise patients that we are seeing is going to continue. there were 22 demises in August of 2022, which ties the record number of demises in July of 2021. And so far in September, there have been 7, and it's only the 8th day of the month. Now, these statistics include 2 hospitals in the Central Valley, so you haven't seen all of them. And some of them also have gone through the emergency department or the operating rooms. But there have still been so many in our department. It's a lot of work for you as the bedside RN, and it's also a lot of work for me, the writer. Demises have taken a lot of my time away from the other groups of patients that I serve, so I hope this trend doesn't continue indefinitely. And then there's more to this email, but it was basically saying, oh, because all these babies are dying, you guys need to learn how to handle a dead baby's body. But it should have been, because these babies are dying, we should find out why they're dying and get to the bottom of this, and the public should know, and people should be outraged. That's what it should have said. It got worse. So during that email, we were seeing 1 to 2 per week. In the last 12 months, it seems like there was 1 every day that I came to work. And 2 months ago, one of the nurses told me that there were 8 in 1 day. And then 3 or 4 weeks before that, there were 5 in 1 day. So the number has increased. And then the health issues, moms are more critical too now.
The data from worse, more confident, Pfizer themselves, which Pfizer and the CDC and the FDA attempted to bury for 75 years. Let's talk about this data. Okay, this was available February 28th, 2021. And the viewers, you can go look at it yourself. You won't find it on the Google search engine because it's hidden. They don't want you to see this. But you will find it on any other search engine. Just go to Pfizer, P-F-I-Z-E-R, 5.3.6, and then go to page 7. You'll see in the first 10 weeks of rollout, it was the deadliest drug ever known to man. I challenge anybody watching this, as I've done for the last 2 years, to show me another drug rollout that's had more than 1,223 dead people after the vaccine. It doesn't exist. In 1976, when I was a medical student and we rolled out the COVID, the swine flu vaccine, 26 deaths in that period, immediately ripped off the market. Rotavirus vaccine in 1999, 2000, nobody died. No children died from that. There were a dozen cases of telescoping of the body, of the bowel, the so-called intussusception. It was immediately pulled off the market. What's different now? The obstetrical data on page 12 of that Pfizer 5.3.6 document is horrible. First of all, pregnant women were not even allowed to take this. In fact, they didn't include pregnant women in any of their phase 1, phase 2, or phase 3 clinical trials, period. So there were not supposed to be any pregnant women getting this on rollout, but there were. And here's what they showed. There were 270 pregnant women, as you can see on the slide. They didn't even follow up 238 of them. They didn't even follow them up. Are you serious? They had miscarriages, and if you look at the ones that they did follow up, the miscarriage rate was 81%. There is a 5-fold increase in stillbirth rate. There is a 7.9-fold increase in neonatal death rate. There's a 15.7% risk of adverse complications in the newborns breastfeeding after these mothers that were vaccinated. You can't make that up. You can't change it. That's what Pfizer's own data said.
Yeah, it was just wrong on every level, everything you could, every level you could possibly imagine.
I mean, if you knew that, if you followed pregnancies that ended up in miscarriages or stillborns and stuff like that, then why attempt to give more moms vaccines if you know that some people have lost their babies?
That three-letter word, why? Why? This
was a trillion-dollar cash cow ad infinitum, and that's why they moved forward.
February 28th, 2021, that was the end of the 90-day rollout, and that was the deadliest drug with horrible obstetric outcomes. And this was, I had this data. The CDC had this data. HHS had this data. What did the HHS and CDC do?
$13 billion through a newly formed CCC, COVID-19 Community Corps. And they hired initial members, sponsors, 298 organizations, medical groups, and individuals that were high influencers,
including the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. By a Freedom of Information Act request, that American College of OBGYN, we got 1,400 pages, 50% of them were redacted. They took at least $11 million, and we documented that they signed an agreement that they were not allowed to deviate from the narrative of the HHS and CDC. And had they done so, they would have had to pay every penny back.
It was money, money, money. Let's get as many people jabbed as we possibly can. And I just hope the money was worth it. Cost her a sister. Another granddaughter. And a daughter.
I didn't expect my son to pass before I did. So I followed with FEMA to help me bury my son. You know, I had nothing. In December 2021, I get another phone call. It was FEMA calling me. They needed more information. I said, no, you don't. You have everything you asked for. I said, and you denied me. So just destroy that application, leave me alone. And they said, they had me on the phone for over 45 minutes. Mr. Ramirez, if you can do this, if you can change your son's death certificate so it says COVID, we can help you financially. I said, no. I said, I will not disrespect my son like that. I will not, you know, falsify government documents for financial gain. Then they call me just about every month. So the last time I talked to them, they offered me $10,000 to $35,000. I said, that's nothing. I said, my son was my world. You'd have to give me the world double over, and then that's still not going to be enough to keep me happy, you know, because the only thing that's going to keep me happy is my son being next to me.
She had no bad in her.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people think that their kid is, you know, the best kid. And they, but she was the best of me, the best of us.
It is definitely a darker world without her here.
The tsunami of misery, of acute respiratory infection, hospitalization, post-acute sequelae syndrome, sadly, death with the illness, and now the wave of vaccine injuries, disabilities, and deaths has been crushing in terms of human despair. It has been overwhelming in terms of misery, and it has changed the course of people's lives. Remember, even the rarest side effect is meaningful when a therapy or a vaccine is applied to a giant population. I think fortunately with the advent of multi-drug therapy to treat the syndromes, now advancements we're making in injury syndromes, we have helped hundreds of millions of individuals.
I think that we move forward. We talked about doing everything we can to try to mitigate potential injury and potential damage and potential fertility issues, which no doubt exist. I'm here to tell you that number one, we're not sure what you received in those vaccines. Nobody knows. It's actually a DOD product, and we're not allowed to look at it. We're not allowed to look at and analyze these vials. But what we do know is that it does affect the immune system. So if we use specific immune naturopathic enhancing substances, like, for example, the vitamin D3 and K2 cream, and I prefer the cream. I think it's a superior product than the oral. And we get your vitamin D levels. You know, I'd put 10,000 units of that on your skin a day until we get your levels up to around 80. That's very safe. I encourage you to use zinc, at a unit dosing preparation, either 30 to 50 milligrams. I would also encourage you to use vitamin C. I would encourage you to use a few drops of supersaturated iodine a day. Those are all very valuable. The melatonin has been helpful. Quercetin has been helpful. But I would give you a lot of hope with those, with a tincture of thyme and eating well, trying to stay away from highly processed foods, trying to keep your body as clean as possible, you know, no smoking, no alcohol. It's not pretty. It's very upsetting. Fertility rates are down in every country in the world. It's very disturbing. The all-cause mortality is up everywhere in the world. It's very concerning. Not just United States, not just Canada, not just Australia, not just New Zealand. It's bad, but I have a lot of hope.
I don't know, I just hope nobody has to go through what I have to. I'm afraid the next time I get pregnant, it's gonna be the same thing over again, just something different.
My hope is that the truth is going to come out. And I believe some people are waking up. And within time, I'm hoping that they realize, you know, that they didn't do anything wrong, that they were poisoned. And I want them to demand answers. I want them to say things like, why didn't you tell me that there was a possibility that I would lose my baby if I received this shot while pregnant? I really want them to demand answers. I want accountability from these doctors. And I want informed consent to be a true thing.
It's evil. It is nothing short of evil. I don't know what else to call it. But these people need to be stopped.
They need to be held accountable. They need to not be able to do this. I don't understand how everybody is just sitting back and letting them do this. I can't wrap my head around it.
By the time the vaccines were advanced towards children, we knew that the vaccines caused myocarditis. The FDA had already had meetings in June of 2021, declared the vaccines caused myocarditis. The peak age we found out was 18 to 24, but there was a tail of myocarditis that occurred clearly in the teenage years. The CDC has an advisory panel that advises our country on what vaccines children should take. It's called ACIP, A-C-I-P. And in an unprecedented and shocking move, ACIP approved the messenger RNA vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, to be installed into the childhood vaccine schedule. Now, all the prior vaccines had to go through development, full FDA licensure, approval, testing, and they had to have, at the time they were introduced, they had to have some medical necessity, clinical indication, and have some track record on safety and efficacy to ever even get put on the vaccine schedule. But the COVID-19 vaccines were not fully FDA approved, not licensed. They're under emergency use authorization. Their genetic mechanism of action would be the first genetic
shot that would a child would ever receive. There was no assurances on short or long-term safety. In fact, the childhood studies relied on antibodies, surrogate endpoints, what's called immunobridging studies, and the diagnostic division of the FDA advised doctors to not rely on antibodies as an indicator of immunity. Yet the FDA vaccine division relied on antibodies as endpoints in clinical trials.
We need more people to stand up, is what we need. Whether it affected your family or not, because eventually it's going to. And don't come to me later and say, I'm sorry, I should have listened to you. No, I'm telling you now. I said, because I don't have to be here. I could tell you need to worry about your own, and I can keep on trying to live a normal life. But I'm not like that. I never taught my son to be like that.
Sweet little butterfly, please never go. Sweet little butterfly, I want you to know, everything you touch and every place you fly will flourish and prosper. Please don't say goodbye. I wonder if you leave, what will I do? It's a sad thought, but I already knew. Life will darken and light will stop, like climbing a mountain and never reaching the top. Sweet little butterfly who took you away, they must not have known I needed you to stay. I cry and I plead, but I already know, wherever you are now, they won't let you go. I can't be selfish, you weren't mine to keep, and the arms of our Father is where you now sleep. I know you're okay, I know you're all right, but I'm scared of the dark, and you're my light. Sweet little butterfly, I know that someday, I'll see you again, and you'll ask me to stay. I hope that you fly me around to let me see the new world you brought your light to, that's where I should be. Sweet little butterfly, you've grown into something pure, bright. You're an angel now, and we are still living in your light.
A recent Kaiser Family Foundation survey demonstrated parents are backing away from the entire childhood schedule completely, saying, listen, if they're going to install this in the schedule, if this is the same group that used their judgment to install the other vaccines on the schedule, and the vaccine, the committee, by the way, voted unanimously that these should be on the schedule. If this is the same committee, their judgment is being questioned for all the other vaccines. And I can tell you, as a practicing doctor, I previously never questioned the vaccines. I never did. A child today with this ACIP schedule, which continues to build, nothing drops off it, just more shots are added. A child today, before COVID, faced 72 injections, 16 different diseases, and now with COVID, it's 17 diseases, and now over 100 shots, and more keep getting added. Respiratory syncytial virus just approved.
What I find really disturbing and reprehensible that I saw in the records was very, very disturbing to me. Why a baby that's dying doesn't have lungs, it's dying of severe respiratory acidosis, severe lack of oxygen, why would you give that baby? I think I saw a hepatitis B vaccine in the chart. Seriously? You got to be kidding me. Why would you get a hepatitis B vaccine in a baby that's dying? You know, what are you doing? Adding insult to injury? I mean, first of all, you don't vaccinate. You shouldn't ever vaccinate people that are sick because they're much more likely to have. That's vaccine 101. Everybody knows that. Why would they give any baby a hepatitis B vaccine? Babies aren't sexually active. They're not at risk. Why would you give it? It's such a vulnerable time of one's life.
Does it surprise me? I don't know if I'm surprised. I feel like that's horrific, but I'm not surprised that these nurses are just doing what's on their checklist because they even want us to give the hepatitis B vaccine in the first 12 hours, but that's horrific. There's no reason for it. And so the hepatitis B has aluminum in it, and it has formaldehyde. Some of these shots have aborted fetal tissues in them.
And what we're learning there is that the ACIP panel, just like they did with the COVID-19 vaccines, they've actually had a blind eye towards safety of the original childhood schedules. Very important. A blind eye to safety. A parent must, with no pressure, coercion, or threat of reprisal, must be able to choose
whether to administer a vaccine or not administer a vaccine when death has been a reported side effect of any routine vaccine. And I'm telling you, it's been reported for the vaccines in the routine vaccine schedule, and it's even worse with multiplicity of vaccines, when the vaccines are bundled together. And so now children together may face an unbelievable assembly of vaccines. And we have to look as a population as a whole, that if death is possible, which it is clearly possible after the agents on the routine schedule, we must have risk mitigation, that is, steps in place to make sure it doesn't happen again. And two, we must have freedom, unfettered freedom of parental choice in taking a vaccine. This is a really critical element if death is an outcome.
Even if you don't have kids, you have nephews, nieces, and or your grandchildren, or anything, you know, you need to stand up for the kids, because it takes everyone.
To have to go home alone without your baby that you've just carried for 9 months, and then to go home and your baby, don't take your baby with you, that has to be the most heart-wrenching feeling in the world. And it's happening by multiples, like it's happening all over the nation.
We know what we're going through, but we have no idea what that little baby went through. Went through a living hell on earth to get to heaven.
Number 57 on her bucket list was to attend
a lantern festival.
A floating lantern festival. So we're making her
Very own.
Her floating lantern festival.
Yeah.
And we hope we get enough people to show up. We have a couple hundred of these things, and we're gonna try to release them roughly at the same time, I think. And hopefully everything goes well, but we just know that she'd love it.
Yeah. Everyone's gonna write a message to her on their lantern, and we'll send those up to her.
Tonight is about a celebration for Trista. Missing her, loving her, but at the same time, we want to fight what killed her. We need to bring attention to what did this.
Stop it from taking anyone else's child.
We don't want anybody else to go through that.
And Trista would
be hell mad at us.
She'd be really mad at us if we didn't try and save other children. Because all she wanted to do was help kids, so she would not want us to be quiet.
No.
Through the madness and the lies, as they're holding back the truth, no matter what they try, I will always fight for you. I will save your innocence, they are trying to remove. I am here at your defense, and I will always fight for you. Yes, I will always fight for you. I will stand here in the way, and I will not give up on you. I will shield you from the pain. In the battle on the field, there is evil on the move, but I hope that you can feel that I will always fight for you.
In the darkness of the times, there's a light that shines the proof. It'll soon reveal the crime, so I won't stop this fight for you. If I will always fight for you, I will brave every attack. And I will not give up on you, I will always have your back. So to every single mother, father, stand up for your sons and daughters. Do not back down, don't let up. You are all they have for armor. So make this a war to win. Look in their eyes and tell them that I will always fight for you. I will stand guard at the gate, and I will not give up on you. I will stop each shot they take. Yes, I will always fight